Well, I went on a little field trip yesterday after telling you guys about several possibilities. One of them, going to get Mansky rolls in San Marcos at Gill's Broiler.
Get the Mansky roll.
Another one, going to the Ransom Center to look at the literary effects of many of our big-time authors.
Oh, you did
go. Century. No, I told you I was planning to do that.
Oh, no. He went to San Marcos and had a burger.
I did neither of those two things. I got closest to the Ransom Center option because as I was in my hotel room after the show taking a nice leisurely nap and dreaming about candy canes and marshmallow puffs and all sorts of candy, I woke up and I said, you know what? I'm in Austin. I'm going to study a famous case. And I watched the Tower documentary.
Oh, you did?
Oh, I did.
I bet that started him on a trail of tears, too.
That started me... Let me finish, George. That started me on a trail of tears. Because I read all about the case, and then I got in my vehicle, and I traveled to the site of the shooting. And I cannot believe that I have lived on this earth for 78 years, and I have never took time to walk the mall in front of the tower and to read enough of the stories to know where everything happened and what exactly happened.
Knowing your macabre background, it is shocking you haven't done that.
Okay.
Brutal
you mean,
and
you
macabre.
Mean living in Texas, it's shocking that I haven't done that. Anyway.
You've been to Vitello's, for God's sake.
What is what?
How have you not walked the mall?
I don't know what Vitello's is. What is that?
You know what that is?
Blakely got it.
How do you know that name?
It's where Robert Blake off Bonnie Lee Bakley, and you went behind Vitello's and stared at
the dumpster
where her body was found.
For free Maverick tickets.
First of all, you're getting all the information wrong.
Oh, you know?
For free Maverick tickets? What?
I heard that on a show once.
Anyway, so August 1st, 1966 is when this happened. And Charles Whitman was a 25-year-old guy who was well-liked and was a Marine, former Eagle Scout, polite kid. He was an architectural student. He was smart. But he'd had these violent thoughts for a while, for about a year at least, before the shooting. And he even mentioned to a psychologist there on the campus, because he went to go see the staff psychologist at UT, and said that he had been having these violent thoughts. And the psychologist recommended he come back the next week, and he never did. Hmm. That was several months before. So Whitman decides to do this. And before he started his rampage from the tower on August 1st, he killed his mother first. His mother had taken an apartment near him in Austin from Florida. He was from Florida, but he'd come here for college. And his mother finally broke up with Whitman's abusive dad just months before this happened and moved to Austin to be near her son. That proved fatal for her because something about the breakup of his parents' marriage, even though his dad was incredibly controlling and abusive, triggered his psychotic thoughts more. And he was very, you know, protective of his mother, and he disliked his father. His father's middle name, Adolf. And so he writes in this note, he was typing out this note on July 31st, the night before the shootings, which was before he killed his mom and his wife that evening of the 31st. He types out this note, and it is a fascinating read to read the note that he says. He says that he does not know why he's going to do this.
God.
He cannot pinpoint it exactly. He said something to the effect that he didn't think this world was worth living in. He didn't seem to be particularly hateful towards everyone or anything like that. He just had this violent impulse that he needed to do this thing. And he killed his mom because he said that he felt like she was incapable of enjoying the world the way that she should and deserved to.
Wow.
And that she had suffered so much at the hands of his father, basically, and that he didn't want her to have to suffer anymore. So he goes and kills his mom. He's by the way, he's typing this note, and the typewritten note suddenly stops. And then it comes back in handwriting and says, interrupted by friends. Killed mom at so-and-so time.
Just matter-of-factly.
Yes, matter-of-factly. He went from this kind of long, you know, explanation typed out to he visited with friends for, I think, a while that night before, after the friends left, and they said that he was fine, completely fine, friendly. Mm. And then after they left, he went and killed his mom, and then he killed his wife, and he explained why he was going to kill his wife beforehand in the typewritten portion. He said that he didn't want her to have to live with the embarrassment of all this. And it was also in that note when he said that he wants them to do an autopsy on him to find out if there's something wrong with his brain.
I remember that.
That was making him have these violent impulses.
Hey, did he pick August 1st for a reason?
I don't think so. There's no indication that he did in anything that I read. So he kills his mom, kills his wife. Then the next morning, he goes and writes some bad checks at a bank to get about what would be equivalent to about $2,500 a day or $2,000 out of the bank. And he starts going to various stores. He buys a shotgun from Sears that he then went home and sawed off the butt of it and the barrel of it. He bought an M1 carbine. He buys some magazines for these guns that he... And he loads them up. So he basically outfits himself with most of his weapons that day. Mm. And he also had a 35 pump rifle. He had a 6mm Remington 700 that I think he had beforehand. And he puts all this stuff in this huge footlocker kind of thing. And he goes to the campus. And he goes to the main building there, and he goes to the tower, and he can't get the elevator to work to get up to the top of the tower. And he talks to this young woman who's working at the desk. This is a woman named Vera, and she helps fix the elevator for him, gets him to where he can go up the elevator.
Did she live with that guilt?
And, oh, gosh, yes. And he smiled at her and repeated. He said, "Thank you, ma'am. I can't tell you how happy this makes me. I can't tell you how happy this makes me."
Creepy.
That he wasn't going to have to try to drag this huge footlocker thing all the way up there because it had all these weapons in it, as well as some other things I'll get to in a moment. So he gets to the top. He encounters a family that was up there getting ready to go out on the observation deck. He kills a receptionist up there that was that helped people, you know, let people through to the observation deck. He killed the family that was going to it. A couple people from that, injured a couple people from that family, killed the receptionist, gets out there, and at 11:47, 11:48 in the morning is when he fires his first shot from there down to ground level, and that's the first person he hits is that 18-year-old girl who was 8 months pregnant. She's the one who laid out on the pavement. And you have to understand, it's August 1st. It was incredibly hot. It was a 100-degree day, and the pavement was scorching. And that woman laid out there on the pavement. She was walking with her boyfriend across the North Mall portion in front of the tower. And she says she felt like she had stepped on a live wire. She felt electrocuted all of a sudden. And she didn't know what was happening. She started, you know, falling down. And her boyfriend looks towards her and tries to grab her and says, "Baby," and then the next thing, he's hit through the chest. He's basically dead instantly. She has to lay there because she's been shot through the abdomen, and Whitman's bullet went through her abdomen and through the baby's skull and killed the baby, but she was still laying there on the pavement. She survived that whole shooting, but had to lay out there for the entirety of the shooting next to her dead boyfriend. One of the amazing stories from the tower is, as she's laying out there with her dead boyfriend, another woman comes walking up to her seeing what's wrong, and there's the shots going off and everything, and the woman lays down next to the pregnant woman and talks to her for the next hour as shots are raining down to keep the pregnant woman conscious into the line of fire. And then you start reading about all the other people that were shot and hit, because Whitman ended up killing 16 people, counting his mother and his wife, 14 people out there before he was finally shot. That rampage lasted, I think, 96 minutes, over an hour and a half, which is an incredibly long amount of time. And the most of the killing and the wounded happened in the first 20 minutes, however, when he was just firing with impunity, because eventually people from the ground started going out to their trucks, these good old boys, getting their rifles from their trucks, and Whitman faced tons of ground fire from just citizens. And so he had to start using the rain spouts rather than leaning over the top of the deck and firing down, so that affected his range and where he could shoot. And, of course, they knew he was using those, so they're firing through the rain spouts. Of course, that presented a problem with Martinez and McCoy and some of these officers who went up there after the hour and a half trying to get to him, because they're having to keep down because they're taking on such fire from the ground and having to avoid the rain spouts, getting by past those quickly, while trying to find the sniper. They're trying to keep from being killed by the people down on the ground.
Well, in today's world, too, if you were trying to do that, there's a good chance that as a SWAT team arrived...
Oh, I can't imagine that.
Shot.
I can't imagine how scary it would have been to arrive on campus if the same happened now, which I guess it could, because now that you can carry on UT's campus, I believe.
Yeah.
You just don't know who's all the shooter. And if you got 20 people out there with a gun,
man,
you don't know what's happening. Anyway, so if you read about all the people that were shot and you look at the range at which Whitman, it really is an amazing bit of shooting that he did. First of all, he's shooting from an elevation, which you have to adjust for that. He's only using a 4-power scope, and he's hitting people as much as 500 yards away.
Was he a military sharpshooter?
He was. He was a Marine sharpshooter. Same as Oswald was. They were both sharpshooters.
You seem to, back to Oswald.
Yeah, you seem to gravitate towards those kind of people.
The shots he's making are incredible, and the fact that he was able to do this for that long without breaking down and killing himself, or, you know, I always figured that those people, after they see the horror of what they've done, they can't go on much longer, mm-hmm. right? Like, they oh, my God, what have I done? And then they kill themselves. But how he's going for an hour and a half, and when they searched his footlocker afterwards, he had some sweet rolls, cans of peaches, he had toilet paper, he had a 3-gallon jug of water, he had ropes and tarps, and he had planned for something much longer than all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But he was greeted by those... the few cops who were able to get up there on their own, because it was kind of no organized effort to get up there, and Officer Martinez and McCoy were the main ones who got up there independently and were able to fire on him. And it was the citizen who had grabbed a rifle who went up there and was deputized at the bottom of the stairs from the 27th to the observation deck.
Wow.
Who fired a shot, a warning shot, distracted Whitman, and allowed Martinez to come up and empty his service revolver into Whitman. Why are you showing us that?
This is the picture of Whitman laying dead on the observation deck. I thought you would want that.
Now, this is the observation deck here, so I guess there's a tie-in.
Look at that.
No,
I don't want to look at that. Sir? Yeah. Stared at that too long yesterday. Oh, gosh! But... the Robert E. Lee statue that was just removed recently, mm-hmm. big controversy down here at UT, you see how much that figured into the shooting? It's amazing the people that were hiding back behind that Robert E. Lee statue and pedestal that were there. As a matter of fact, one of them was a cop named Billy Speed, 23-year-old policeman. Boy, and you start... that's the other thing. As I'm walking around the UT campus and just seeing all the young people there and seeing people out there playing Frisbee on the lawn and seeing the... people laughing, having conversations, and it's just a gorgeous day yesterday. And then knowing the horror that happened there back in August 1966, and then realizing that even the cops that were this particular cop that was killed, only 23, and these people were so young that died. But standing right there at the base of that Robert E. Lee statue, Whitman was able to shoot through the little balustrades? I don't know what you call those things. They're gaps in between that are holding up the upper railing of that little deck.
Okay. There.
And Billy Speed was standing back behind there, and Whitman was able to shoot through those and hit him from hundreds of yards away and killed that officer.
Wow.
And while I was standing there at this location, which used to have the Robert E. Lee statue up on top of it, no longer there, I noticed this one dude standing near me, and there's carving all over this the plaster of this little sitting area that where the Robert E. Lee statue used to be, and people carving lovers' names into it, you know, hey, you know, school's kick ass, whatever. And I was, it was so defaced around there. I was shocked into this pretty white, you know, marble or plaster, whatever it was. And there was this one dude standing there, and I noticed he gets out something sharp, and he starts carving something right in front of the, where the, beside where the Robert E. Lee statue was. And I watch him doing it, and I'm like, do I bust this dude? And I just let it go. And so I just let it go. And afterwards, I walked over to it after he had kind of strolled around, and it's an R.I.P. Billy Speed, who was shot and killed in this very spot.
And wow. Who do you suppose it was? You think it was?
And I went up afterwards because the guy circled back around. He's a young guy. Young guy. Looked like a student or something. And I said, hey, I noticed you did that. He goes, yeah, I looked at all this graffiti over here, and not one mentioned that officer that lost his life right here in this very spot.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, I heard there's bullet holes around here still. He goes, right here, and you look right there. There's a huge chunk taken out, and the trajectory lines right up with the tower. And then right up above it, about 2 feet above it, is also a bullet hole where it hit the top of the railing, and the trajectory lines right up with the tower, too. I mean, just these huge bullet holes right there. And it was right, and it was while he was zeroing in on Billy Speed, because it's all right there in line with where he eventually hit Speed.
Man. You know, that's interesting. I remember a couple of years ago on the 50th anniversary, I guess, there was a big controversy down here because the university has basically ignored the whole incident forever. Right. And there may be one little plaque, I think, that they put up.
I think it was in 2016 was when they finally erected a plaque and acknowledged, you know, the victims of that. The pregnant woman who had laid out there for an hour and a half on the baking pavement, she survived. She survives that shooting, and there were a few of them that were hiding behind the Robert E. Lee statue that finally ran out there after she had laid out there for a while. While Whitman was still shooting, they ran out and grabbed her, and this big old boy picked up the dead weight of her boyfriend, and he couldn't even run off like the other two did with her as they were leading her off. He has to grab this kid and basically lumber off while the fire's coming down.
He made it.
And he made it, yeah.
Wow.
And he said, you know, he said it was harder than grabbing the people that he had to in Nam because this guy was clearly fully dead and just dead weight and couldn't get him off there. But the bravery of some of those people, and in the Tower documentary, you see one woman who says that was such a defining moment that day. Because you have to remember, there was no mass shooting before this, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was unprecedented. She goes, that day really separated. You saw the people who had courage, and you saw the people who were too scared to do anything courageous like that.
Yeah.
And she goes, I was not one of the courageous ones.
Wow.
She said, I stood there and I watched those people who did go out there. And I watched that woman who went out there and leaned over the pregnant woman and talked to her the whole time.
Wow.
And I didn't do anything.
And sadly, today, mass shootings are headlines every 3 months.
Yeah. Whitman, 25 years old when he did it. And he didn't know why he did it.
Well, spooky.